all across Wisconsin from Civic Media. This is Up North News Radio. Real information, good conversation, unabashedly Wisconsin. Here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
And welcome back to the second hour of Up North News Radio. For this Thursday, January 26th, coming up this hour, Senator Tammy Baldwin talking to us about mental health care access that she's fighting for in Congress to help folks in Wisconsin. Timothy Johnson, a CRNA, will help us appreciate the role of certified registered nurse anesthetists.
Good work,
Johnson. Thank you. And that's all thanks to the helpfulness of that voice right there, Dr. Kristen Lyerly. Timothy Johnson will be part of our weekly hometown health segment, but Dr. Lyerly, an OBGYN based in Green Bay, joins us now. Hello.
Hello and good morning.
I hold you responsible for not being able to get that second cup of coffee because usually on these long commercial breaks, we take care of coffee and other matters. Instead, we were just prattling on, you know, like hens on the farm. And so consequently, that's why the Coke Zero is coming out just a little bit earlier today. I couldn't make another pot of coffee.
Sorry, Pat. I also didn't wake my kid up for school and I don't know.
Do you want to give a shout? If you want to shout right now, I think the listeners would like to hear that.
It's Lindsay, wake up, Lindsay. I don't know. I'm not feeling hopeful.
I'm really hoping that there's a Lindsay in the audience someplace who just reacted to that mom voice.
Who knows? You might have saved someone's life who was driving on the highway, nodding off a little bit.
I'm sorry.
No, don't be. 844.
Oh, he made it.
See? Fantastic.
He looks a little frazzled, but he's going to make it. It's good.
Mom. 844-967-2789 or 715-388-7155. All right. Let's talk about the state of the state and the state of the other state. And in talking about the state of the other state, I'm going to go over to Michigan, which now has a Democratic-controlled legislature and a second term for Michigan Governor Gretchen Whitmer. And her state of the state was yesterday, where she talked about prioritizing stricter gun laws, repealing outdated laws that restrict abortion and who one can marry, and providing pre-K education for all four-year-olds in the state. Whitmer's fifth state of the state also included a pledge to help with rising costs through immediate tax relief. That also includes an increased earned income tax credit and a repeal of the retirement tax. A little different, Kristen, than what we were having to deal with over here.
I hear her saying, I look to the future and I'm cutting taxes. And what we were dealing with were a bunch of snoozing Republicans who were just angry and saying things that were just old-fashioned, overused tropes.
Just cliches. Now Michigan has a $9 billion surplus because of the way that their Democratic governor has provided leadership. Minnesota has, I believe, a $16 billion surplus with Democratic Governor Tim Walz and now a Democratic legislature. And we learned yesterday the Legislative Fiscal Bureau has once again increased the estimate of Wisconsin's budget surplus to $7.1 billion. And yet again, unlike those things that are probably going to happen in Michigan, we will probably spend a lot of time in Wisconsin watching the legislature spin its wheels. Because you listen to the speech, I listen to the speech, and we know what the governor wants to do, but I'm not hearing much in the response that indicates there's going to be any attempt to meet in the middle.
The response didn't have anything to do with the speech. No. The speech was, there were so many good things, and I loved the commitment to shared revenue that the governor discussed, because that has been a huge problem for so many years. So I'm really looking forward to seeing that in all of our municipalities across the state.
And on top of that, we got a nice moment of humanity that Kristen wanted to hear again when the governor got a little mixed up on his script talking about a small business in Fond du Lac called Edith's Bridal and Tuxedo in Fondy. And here's how it came out.
Some things haven't changed much over the years, like Edith's right downtown in Fondy, where Kathy bought her first wedding, or her wedding, not her first wedding dress. Her first and last wedding dress, I hope. Good Lord.
poor guy.
I love it. But, you know, my favorite thing about that is Governor Evers is just who he is. He's such an authentic person who really just cares. He doesn't have a hidden agenda. He's just trying to do his best. And I think that that clip really shows just what a wonderful human being he is.
And then, again, the contrast, and we're going to talk about this more with Senator Baldwin coming up, but for him to spend so much time talking about mental health care, and that the answer from Republicans, well, from Speaker Robin Voss, was that's not going to happen. And then Stephen Thorson commented on Twitter. He says, quote, "It's honestly unbelievable that the official GOP position is Democrats destroyed school children during COVID, and I oppose spending a single dollar to fix that." Mm-hmm. Because again, they assess blame, but then they block the things. So even if you were to agree, which I don't, you know, that mental health issues were increased solely because of COVID safeguards, but even if that's your position, why wouldn't you want to help those kids and all of those people? But again, the answer is always no.
They're not into helping. They're into finger pointing and fear mongering and confusing, and we deserve better.
Oh, without a doubt. Timothy Johnson is going to join us next to talk about CRNAs, the role that they play in hometown health, which is the segment coming up. And then after that, we will talk to Senator Tammy Baldwin more about mental health and the fight to restore women's health care rights. All that and more on a Thursday on Up North News Radio. I don't know if there is an official song for nurse anesthetists, but you could do worse than picking the Cordettes, right? Is Hometown Health. Kristen, why are we talking about CRNAs this week?
Because it's CRNA week, Pat. Okay. This is the week that we celebrate certified registered nurse anesthetists. And to join us, we have one of the best, certainly the best in Wisconsin, Timothy Johnson.
Timothy practices with the Veterans Administration, the Green Bay Clinic, and at the Milwaukee Hospital. He is past president of the Wisconsin Association of Nurse Anesthetists. So if ever there were a spokesperson for CRNAs, it is Timothy Johnson. Good morning.
Good morning. How's everybody?
You know, we've got Kristen here, so we're awake, we're alert, we're alive, we're enthusiastic.
As we need to be.
It's great that Kristen's here. She's very familiar with what we do.
Yes. Tell us more about that, Kristen, as you lead into talking to Timothy about CRNA Week.
Yeah, well, you know, I have worked with CRNAs throughout my entire career as a physician. They are an integral part of our healthcare system. And I don't think that a lot of people really understand where they fit in. And I think a lot of people just assume that you are an anesthesiologist, Tim. So tell us, what is a CRNA and what is the role of a CRNA in healthcare today?
Yeah, like you said, there's a lot of roles in today's healthcare that are integral. And we're one of the professionals that help patients during the surgery period, but we also do much more than surgery. But I'll talk more about the surgery aspect first. So we are anesthesia professionals. There's over 1,000 of us in the state of Wisconsin right now, and nationally there's over 60,000 of us. And what we do is we're a specialized nurse practicing advanced practice nurse that has a degree in anesthesiology. And patients are mostly familiar with us during the surgery period. That helps keep you relaxed during surgery, comfortable, and take control of your pain and issues after surgery.
So where do you fit in the grander scheme of the healthcare team that might be taking care of somebody who's having a surgery?
So as the anesthesia provider, you'll be introduced to a number of people during your day of surgery. We will handle the anesthesia part. So we will interview you first before surgery, make sure you have any questions, review your health history, and make sure you're optimized and safe to have surgery that day. We'll go over an anesthesia plan for you. There's different ways that we can conduct anesthesia for you. Most people think that we're always putting you to sleep, but that's not always the case. There's different ways to do that now. Historically, we always had to use ether. That's way back 50, 60 years ago, but that's long gone now. So there's different ways that we can make you comfortable, and that's included in our training. We have to pass special certifications to be able to do that.
Yeah, and you talk about your training. What is the traditional education track that CRNAs take to achieve licensing and certification? It's different than what a physician would do.
Yeah, so people think of the physician track would be like they talk about the Socratic method, and then nurses, we go through more of a nursing theory track. Some people call it the Nightingale theory. But traditionally, we go through an undergraduate degree at an accredited nursing school. So we get a 4-year degree as a nurse. And then most of us will go and work at a critical care environment, which would be an ICU most of the time, emergency room. Myself, I was a paramedic and a flight nurse. So I had pre-hospital experience along with ICU experience. And we usually do that on average 3 to 4 years. I went to school with some people that had over 10 years experience in critical care fields. So after that portion, then if you decide to go on to continue your nursing education and you decide to do an anesthesia tract, you would apply and go through a fairly rigorous process to get accepted to a graduate nursing anesthesia program. And at the time when I was going through 10 plus years ago, it was a master's degree, but now it has transitioned to a doctoral degree. So our nurse anesthetists are graduating with PhDs or doctors of nursing practice degrees. And that's allowing us to do more than just take care of patients in the operative suites. We do more now. So,
yeah, let's talk about the more. So CRNAs are obviously in the OR. That's what we've been talking about. What other things do CRNAs do?
So CRNAs nationally are business owners now. They're entrepreneurs. They're owning their own anesthesia practices. They're multi-state corporations. They also own businesses where they will treat patients aesthetically, maybe with Botox injections, or they help with depression by doing ketamine infusions. That's a growing trend that helps with with depression, PTSD with veterans, chronic pain issues. That's one of the things that we help with patients who are having issues with opioid addictions. We can help treat that. What else do we do? We're actually, nurses actually are very active politically. And we have nurses around the country, nurse anesthetists around the country that are elected to political office. We have some that are CEOs of hospitals and healthcare firms. So that advanced degree is allowing us to get a management tract or a business tract. So there's much more than us just putting you to sleep and keep you comfortable.
No doubt. I always enjoy asking people this question, being married to an OBGYN myself, but who did not, decide on that specialty till I think maybe third year of med school. And I'm sure, Kristen, we've talked to you about that as well. It's one thing to be, 8 years old and say, I want to be a doctor. But then at some point, many people choose some type of a specialty that I want to be a nurse. Well, what kind of a nurse? When and or what was it that drew you toward being a nurse anesthetist?
Yeah, I think for me, it was working with nurse anesthetists during my days as a pre-hospital provider and flight and ground critical care transport, because we worked with anesthesia providers to make sure that we had the proper skills for managing an airway. So I had that experience, managing your patient's airway is very vital to our practice. So having that experience just helped me transition into the nurse anesthetist role. It was one of the aspects. But we also get familiar with critical care, independent thinking, critical care thinking skills, and just being able to handle a situation where a patient might need emergency critical care. So that's an important aspect of our profession.
And you touched on earlier opioid use. And we know that the opioid and fentanyl crisis is a giant plague within our nation right now. And it often starts really innocently when someone has surgery and they need to use opioids to recover from their surgery, but then head down a path that is, you know, obviously very destructive. How can CRNAs help to reduce and responsibly use opioids in the surgery period?
Yeah, this is one aspect that we want to let patients know about, that we can help with this after your surgery. Or, as I mentioned before, it's not only surgery pain, it's chronic pain, it's depression, PTSD issues. But what we can do is offer you treatments that don't have any opioid components to it. In my practice, I use very little opioids now because there's other medications that we can use to help with that. Anti-inflammatory medications, small doses of steroids. We can also do what's called a peripheral nerve block. So depending upon your surgeries that you're having, you know, in your case, Kristen, in the OB field, we can do peripheral nerve blocks on the abdomen. And during C-sections, we can decrease that pain afterwards by using that regional nerve block so the patients don't need any oral opioids or IV opioids. And what does that do? Well, that decreases a chance of getting possibly maintained or addicted to painkillers after surgery, because that's something we don't want to happen. Mm-hmm. So that's something we educate our patients on. And we also educate politicians about this, because we can be helpful in that area. And most people think fentanyl is an illegal trafficked substance, and that the issue comes from the legal side of things. But it actually is a small percentage, like you said, that people get addicted after surgery that turn to that illegal aspect of opioids.
So, you mentioned talking to politicians about it, and we're going to have Senator Tammy Baldwin on next. And you said that she has been very helpful to your field. How so?
Yeah, so I've personally talked with her staff in the past in D.C. and in Wisconsin, but nationally, we look for politicians, elected officials that can help with this. And Senator Baldwin serves on the Senate Health Committee. So she's been instrumental in getting the word out of what anesthesia providers can do to reduce opioid use after surgeries. And she also can help us remove barriers that can hinder our care and hinder our ability to practice to our full scope or a full licensure that sometimes is impeded depending upon different state regulations.
Well, and we need that, because the truth is we don't have enough anesthesiologists, physicians who provide anesthesia, to cover the entire state. So when I work in rural parts of Wisconsin and Minnesota, I'm primarily working with CRNAs. And you know what you mentioned earlier about cesarean deliveries and the tap blocks that we use, that has been life-changing for our patients, reducing the amount of opioids that they're taking afterwards, because everybody's worried about if they're breastfeeding, is my baby going to be affected? So really, that has been a total game changer in my practice.
And related to that, in the couple of minutes we have left here, again, I'm coming at it primarily from an OBGYN standpoint, but in any case, any kind of preoperative discussions that people are having with their healthcare providers, we often hear about a birth plan, but also maybe a pain management plan. Just talk briefly about this. Is, you know, what can folks hearing this, what should they know? They should know it's good to have a plan and not just leave things, well, I'll ask for painkillers if I need them.
Exactly. And it's not just the anesthesia provider, but it's also the surgeon that can be involved with this aspect too, is educating them about different ways to manage their pain and don't always go immediately towards an opioid to control your pain. So it's a multimodal approach is what we call it. And it's a multi-practitioner approach, multidiscipline approach to approach your pain control after surgeries.
So in closing, if there was one thing that you could tell everybody across Wisconsin about CRNAs, what do you want them to know?
That we are have been around for many, many years, over 100 years we've been established as a profession. We're one of your anesthesia providers. I want you to be familiar with who your anesthesia providers are. Ask who we are, what we can do for you to make you comfortable after after your surgeries. And specifically, we want you to be honest with your health history, because often patients won't tell us about everything in their past. And we want to know about that, because we can tailor our anesthetic just exactly to your health history. So we're here to help you. We're not here to be a burden for you. So
no, be upfront, be compliant with instructions.
So
and if they tell you not to eat or drink anything the night before surgery, don't eat or drink anything the night before surgery.
It's legit. It's legit.
It's
you're not going to have your surgery that day. You're going to go home and you're going to try it again.
So. Bringing it up for a reason. Absolutely. Timothy Johnson, exactly. Thank you so much. It was so great to visit with you.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thanks,
all right.
Tim.
And Kristen's going to stick around. Senator Tammy Baldwin's coming up next here on Up North News Radio.
Great.
Follow Up North News online anytime. Search Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter for Up North News WI and our homepage, upnorthnewswi.com.
When Congress passed its omnibus bill in December, it was more than just a stopgap measure. There were also several healthcare initiatives that were placed in there as well, dealing with pandemic preparedness, Medicare benefits, Medicaid expansion, and mental health. And that's going to be the thrust of our discussion here with Senator Tammy Baldwin, along with the 50th anniversary of Roe, and things that she and at the federal level and Dr. Lyerly can help do at the state level to restore the healthcare rights from women that were ripped away last year in the Dobbs decision. And Senator Baldwin joins us now. Senator, good morning.
Good morning. It's great to join you.
It's wonderful to have you here. And we thought of you certainly on Tuesday night when Governor Evers gave his State of the State address and made specific mention of your own leadership role in helping with mental health care access, something even like the new 988 crisis hotline, where the amount of calls has skyrocketed, perhaps both because there are more issues, but also because of the simplicity and the publicity around it that you helped play a role in.
Yeah, I was pleased to pass the 988 Act. You know, there's long been phone numbers you can call in crisis, right? Suicide prevention lines, mental health crisis lines. Nobody memorizes a 10-digit number. And so oftentimes at the worst part of a crisis, it's just not utilized. And so I worked on this bipartisan legislation. We passed it a couple of years ago, and finally the phone number went live last July. And by the way, it's, I think, important to know, especially for young people who prefer to text than talk, you can text the 988 number and we'll get a response in kind. But we've seen, and I'm sure it relates to the pandemic and the isolation and disruption that people faced, trauma in many cases. We've seen a real uptick in folks who identify as feeling hopeless, feeling isolated, feeling depressed. And at the same time, the 988 number is getting used. And so in this recently passed funding bill for the federal government, we were able to really shore up and reinforce some of the services that back up the 988 line. You know, it's a hollow promise if you call and you can't get timely service. So,
oh, exactly.
Included additional funding for staffing that line, for connecting with local mental health nonprofits that can provide more localized service and support for those reaching out. And the follow through is really important.
Follow through is, and it's happening here. A Wisconsin public radio story tells us that callers in Wisconsin waited only 23 seconds for an answer and then spent on average more than 14 minutes talking to a counselor, which is pretty amazing when you consider that between August and December, 988 calls, there were 29,500 of them, a 66% jump in call volume compared to the same period in 2021. Senator, you and others knew that this is a crisis, like the governor said on Tuesday. This is burgeoning. It is silent, but it is serious.
Absolutely. And in my mind, 988 saved lives. It's as simple as that. And we have to back up the phone number with the support that people need. We know we have a shortage of mental health professionals. Related, and I know we're going to talk about it, but a shortage of professionals who are experts in the treatment of substance use disorder. And at a time when the data and the reality shows that the need is great, we need to focus in on making sure that that we have the professionals with the expertise.
You're so right. And I can tell you that as an OBGYN doctor, on January 23rd was 1, 2, 3, 4 Moms Day amongst my colleagues, which was all about maternal health awareness. And the two things that we're focusing on this year are cardiac issues and mental health. People do not understand what a giant burden mental health is and how it leads to other things, including death by suicide, people who are in abusive situations, and drug abuse. So let's talk a little bit about the support that you have been able to garner and to express in the opioid crisis.
Yeah, so we are seeing dramatic and horrifying numbers in terms of overdose deaths. Some of those may be deaths by suicide. It's hard. Many of them, though, frankly, with the introduction of fentanyl, which is many times more powerful than even heroin, it's a synthetic opioid. With the introduction of that, and sometimes people think that they're about to take, say, an Adderall pill, and yet it's laced with fentanyl and there's an overdose. So this is a struggle we have to fight from beginning to end. We have to up our actions in order to prevent fentanyl from getting into this country to begin with. We have to make sure that those who are seeking treatment can get treatment, not be put on a waiting list. It's very important that the treatment be there when somebody presents and wants it. And there are medication-assisted treatment that it can be quite effective with opioid addiction. And then sadly, we need to have wide deployment of the overdose reversal drugs.
That was in a separate legislation that you had proposed along with the State Yes. Opioid Response Grant Authorization Act. These were things that were folded into the omnibus bill for fiscal year 23. That's going to provide more than $1.5 billion for states and tribes to better combat this epidemic. You know, you have been a leader in trying to get these resources out.
Absolutely. And, you know, I think about naloxone and Narcan, the names of the overdose reversal drug, and how many lives could have been saved if it were more widely available. Currently, it needs to be prescribed. I would encourage, and we have legislation to encourage people who prescribe opioids to co-prescribe the overdose reversal drug in case they got in the wrong hands or something like that. But then in places like college dormitories, where sadly we have lost Wisconsinites in college dormitories because they thought they were taking a drug to help them study better, and it ended up being largely fentanyl. Unless people have access to the reversal drug, it's not going to save lives. And so, you know, you'd have a fire extinguisher and a defibrillator in a public location like that, but not necessarily the overdose reversal drug. I've talked to moms who have lost their kids and are really pushing for that, and I support that effort.
the irony is not lost on folks that we are working harder than ever to help people who are affected by, you know, either opioid addiction or other mental health issues, while at the same time, we have politicians who are removing healthcare rights from people. We marked the 50th anniversary of Roe v. Wade, which was repealed last year. The U.S. Secretary of Health and Human Services, Xavier Becerra, toured the Midwest last weekend. Dr. Lyerly, you helped moderate a panel discussion on it. And Senator, you visited with the secretary at UWM as well to hear what the, you know, what is the Biden administration and what are you doing to maintain the fight to protect what fewer rights women have and hopefully restore them at some point?
Yeah. Well, you know, we have just convened in a new session. We're working to reintroduce the Women's Health Protection Act, a bill that I co-author with Senator Blumenthal. That would both codify Roe versus Wade at the national level, make it a part of our laws. But secondly, and I think very importantly in a state like Wisconsin, it would take the further step of saying states cannot pass laws that that erode the Roe versus Wade law. So we've seen in Wisconsin, well, first of all, we have the oldest criminal abortion statute in the country passed a year after statehood in 1849. But beyond that, in many more recent decades, the state legislature has really, encumbered access to abortion care in the state of Wisconsin prior to the Supreme Court obviously overturning it. And we know if we are going to restore that right statutorily at the federal level, we need to make sure that states don't then go and interfere. Now, at the same time, my Republican colleagues, many of them, are rushing to actually do to introduce a national abortion care ban, which would mean that, you know, not only would a state like Wisconsin that already has a criminal abortion ban, there'd be no access, but people would not be able to travel to, say, Illinois or Minnesota or other states where the care is still being provided.
It's just beyond my understanding how they think that this is what the people want and how they arbitrarily set a number as if it's an accounting class instead of people's lives that we're talking about. 15 weeks. Like, what does that even mean to them? Because to me, abortions performed after 15 weeks are often for desired pregnancies that have problems. So not only are these people suffering, but they're being re-traumatized by politicians interfering in the exam room. And I think that's the biggest travesty. I think we all need to know where our places are. We need to work together, but doctors and patients need to be making these decisions.
And you know, this has such real consequences. Dr. Lyerly, you talked about wanted pregnancies where something goes awry. I met with a young woman and her water broke at 18 weeks. And, they wouldn't immediately provide care for her that she needed, that would have been best practice and still is, but was made illegal by the Supreme Court. Not until she had a fever of 101 degrees was she able to get care. In other words, you know, there's still an exception for the life of the mother, and we're watching Wisconsin women have to go to that brink in order to get care. It's just horrible.
Where is that break? Like, tell me where that point right. is, because there's no warning light that comes on. It's just something that a doctor and the team and the patient need to be making those decisions. The DA does not at all have a place in those decisions.
That's right.
No. And so we have a state Supreme Court race coming up with, you know, the conservative judge candidates, including Waukesha judge Jennifer Doro, who told a right-wing talk show host this week why she thought the Dobbs decision was correct and why Roe v. Wade was incorrectly decided and needed to be repealed. So in the 15 seconds we have here, Senator, I know you can make a pitch for people to be sure to vote in the Supreme Court race this spring.
Absolutely. You know, we have a 7-member Supreme Court, and this is going to be a seat that will determine the outcome of incredibly crucial issues, including access to reproductive freedom for half of Wisconsin.
Right? Senator, thank you so much for all you do. It was great to visit with you today. We'll be back. You're up north.
She was like, oh my God, this is my song. I've been listening to the radio all night long, sitting around waiting for it to come.
Do you think Luke and Brian are ever going to get tired of hearing Luke Bryan songs played whenever we talk about Dueling Tangents, the show that airs on the afternoons on many of these civic media stations? I doubt that he will. It's a favorable comparison. We'd ask him, but Luke keeps blowing us off on Thursday morning, so we don't. Wait a minute. There he is. He's on the screen. The microphone might actually work. Good morning, Mr. Mathers.
Good morning, Mr. Krylow. Good morning, Dr. Work. Lyerly.
He is
here. Good morning.
Here.
Can I just tell you what a joy it is for me to flip on the radio 95.9 in the morning and or in the afternoon and hear Dueling Tangents? I just want to call in all the time. And I'm like, no, put the brakes on, Lyerly.
There is nobody happier that we are on in Green Bay than Kristen Lyerly. She has been a one-woman promotions team. The guests' ideas that have come in already from the Green Bay area. And look, for as much as I tease you, and as much of it is deserved, you and everybody there at Civic Media have busted your butt to get us on the air in Green Bay, and we are very appreciative.
Well, the FCC decided to take their time with it, so it was a little bit more of a slow rollout than we would have liked, but it is a lot of hard work went into it, and we're really excited to be on the air in Green Bay. The Fox Valley has a lot of different options when it comes to radio programming now, thanks to Civic Media.
Oh, yeah. Rather than the same old option, which, you know, gave us a show where, like we said in the last segment, you know, a candidate for state Supreme Court talks about, you know, why Roe v. Wade, you know, should have been repealed. So I think the more people know that about Waukesha Judge Jennifer Doro, the less likely they are to say, oh, she was the Waukesha Christmas Parade trial judge. You know, she did a good job on TV. No, there's something much deeper there in terms of her conservative philosophy. And she, like Dan Kelly, both went to the same quote unquote law school that Pat Robertson, you know, started in his TV Evangelist University.
Is that the Christian Broadcast Network University?
Yeah. That would be the one. That's the real name. Yeah.
Yes.
These are the ones that people weren't hearing about in the Fox Valley until now, not just from this program, but from Dueling Tangents as well. How are things on that fine show? I know that Brian travels a lot, so you get fill-in hosts, or are you tap dancing for an hour on your own?
It varies day by day, but most of the time there's a willing participant to join me and go back and forth with some tangents. So recently, Todd Alba of the Todd Alba Show has joined me for an hour last week. Mm-hmm. William Walter, who is an organizer with Our Wisconsin Revolution, joins me from time to time. And then I like to line up guests as well. Dan Schaefer of the Recombobulation Area will join me for a half an hour every now and then. And so it's a good time in the 2 o'clock hour. We have a lot of fun. We try to relate the headlines, talk about why they're important, and just, you know, tap dance when we need to tap dance as well.
nobody does it like you. Now we are on live radio. We are just about an hour away from the Civic Media $1 million giveaway. I know that is a very busy thing over in sales and promotion. And now, is this something that's been rather consuming for you? I mean, are we going to blow the doors off the barn in an hour down there at the Madison World headquarters?
Well, thankfully, I believe the process is going to work. It's not an immediate thing. We're going to accept these applicants. We're going to be working with them, developing the messages for these small businesses that they want to promote across our airwaves. So it's not like we're going to be cranking out ads tomorrow. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to the hopefully large volume of clientele that we'll get to work with due to the $1 million advertising giveaway.
I have a question. Shoot. I am a small business owner who is intrigued by this. How do I learn more?
Boy, she's good at this. All right, the ball's been placed on the tee, Mathers. Go for it.
Simply go to the website, civicmedia.us. At the top, there is a banner. You can click there, or you can go to the URL, civicmedia.us/million. There is going to be a portal opening, as Pat said, in just over an hour at 9 a.m. Central Time here. You'll be able to fill out a brief form, and you'll get to start the process to work with the sales team and develop that message for free advertising, giving away $1 million today only. So don't wait. 9 a.m. it opens, but you only today can take advantage of this $1 million advertising giveaway.
I like how it's a portal. A portal is going to open up here.
I feel like a portal opened up and then Luke stepped into the room.
I know. It's kind of like the transfer portal that the NCAA has now. If you step in the wrong one, you end up, you know, on a Big Ten team. And I know your dunking isn't anywhere like what it should be. So you want the portal for the $1 million in advertising giveaway. And that same civicmedia.us website is where you can hear all about some of these shows, because again, not every show is on every station, but even if you can't get it on your local station, you can listen to it as a podcast. And that part I really like. And there's still the app. That's how people have been listening if they're not near a radio station as well. We haven't talked about TuneIn or Alexa or anything, Luke, probably since you were here helping me out in the mornings, but that remains an option. I mean, there's just no way to miss us. We're everywhere.
Yeah, there's a lot of different ways to listen. And 2023 is going to be a year of even more growth for Civic Media.
We're really, oh, I know. I can't wait to talk about it.
Yeah. Brian and I have a daily kind of ritual now where I send a photo of all the packages that are arriving so that Brian and the rest of the engineering team can kind of figure out logistically what needs to go where next. And then there's a lot of moving parts, and we're excited for the growth, and we're really excited for what Civic Media will be able to offer Wisconsinites when it comes to a rational, refreshing change in News Talk Radio.
Positive, local, community building, all of those things. None of this negative confusion, fear-mongering. Like, no, we are building each other up and creating a better tomorrow.
Well, speaking of which, I did check the Twitter feed, and we need like one of those construction safety signs that I want to just attach to certain people's Twitter accounts. And so for Up North Congressman Tom Tiffany, this reset the board to zero. This account has gone 0 days without mentioning either Mexico or China. And look, what we just talked about with Senator Baldwin is very serious, and fentanyl coming across the border from Mexico is serious. But when you read through the coverage of how we got to this place, there's all kinds of budget cutting that Republicans forced through during the Obama presidency. And then during the Trump presidency, there was about $11 billion that could have been better used that went to this thing called a wall, a useless wall that did not stop the trafficking at all. And so while Congressman Tiffany wants to talk about the southern border, and Congressman Gallagher up there in Green Bay wants to talk about his new China committee, you know, there are folks here that are suffering through addictions, watching what's happening to loved ones, and they need positive action on this, which is why we had Senator Baldwin on talking about the things that we could do. Now, all because Mr. Mathers worked so hard to get us some of this radio real estate. Thanks for helping us promote everybody else along the dial here, buddy.
Absolutely, Pat.
We appreciate it. Aaron, thank you. Thank you, Dr. Lyerly. We will probably talk to you next Monday morning.
It's always a joy, Pat.
6:30, as we always do. So you have a great weekend. Everybody else, thanks for joining us. And we will do this again Friday morning, 6 a.m.